Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing modern frugality and massive debt reduction with Jen Smith.
Jen Smith is a personal finance expert, and she has the experience to back it up. Jen and her husband paid off over $78,000 of debt in less than 2 years, making well under six figures. She's been featured in Kiplinger, U.S. News and World Report, Money Magazine, and she's co-host of the Frugal Friends podcast and blogs over at modernfrugality.com. And Joel, her love for Aldi rivals my own. In fact, she might be the most frugal person we've had on the show. So Jen, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
I am so excited to be here. I'm just excited to hang out with other frugal people who love Aldi. It's a
yes.
Right? You know that you're going to be kindred spirits if you both love Aldi.
Yes.
And it's, luckily, Joel's
it feels
been
so
a,
right.
Joel's a recent convert. He's still more
I've
on
always
that,
loved Aldi.
He's more on that Costco chain.
I do prefer Costco,
but train. But
I love Aldi. You can't. You don't have to choose. That's the beauty of this.
Yeah.
You
know?
They're both great.
Joel was our first guest on our podcast, so I really feel like he's on the frugal train with us. So
nice.
See,
you got to be.
I'm old school frugal. Well, Jen,
yes.
Jen, typically, you know, we have a craft beer on the show. It's really important to us, but we're recording with you in the morning, so we decided, Matt and I decided to have a cold brew coffee. We don't really drink at 9 a.m. typically, but
good habit to not develop.
Right, exactly. But we typically do drink a craft beer on every episode, and so our first question to every guest is, because we prioritize having kind of expensive beer sometimes, it's our way of splurging now while saving and investing well for the future. What is your craft beer equivalent? How do you splurge now while saving for your future self?
So I don't buy a lot of expensive things, but I always dreamed of having like a really nice SUV. So last year when I got pregnant, I took that as an opportunity to say to my husband, like, we need to get me a new SUV, a new used SUV, and it's like bright orange and shiny, 2016, ooh, turbocharged, paid for in cash, but nice to me. Yeah, still,
yeah.
It's a Hyundai, so it's like not a Lexus or anything, but it is.
You didn't get the Escalade with like the blacked out windows or anything like that.
You know, that was my second choice.
Was it?
Okay. Yeah. You know, those blacked out windows, they're good to have in Florida. But
that's a good point.
It probably keeps it a lot cooler in there for sure.
True.
Well, I like it. That's a splurge. Jen, I wanted to mention too, I just thought of this. The coffee that we're having, you know, it's from Aldi. And so I think we're having, it's either the morning roast or the breakfast roast or which one of those. It's like one of the blends or whatever. But I just wanted to let you know that we're drinking Aldi coffee.
It tastes fancy.
Oh, it's really good.
I'm actually drinking Starbucks because I had a free birthday reward that I had to use up. So I feel a little out of place, but it was free.
Awesome. Let's go ahead and dive into frugality, Jen. I think for a lot of folks, that word can conjure up thoughts of a bygone era, you know, maybe visions of single ply toilet paper. And like that doesn't get most folks excited about that concept. But you're on a mission to reclaim this word. Like, what does frugality mean to you? And why isn't this a bad thing?
Yeah, frugality is the least sexy part of personal finance. Like, we love to talk about side hustling and investing and all that stuff. But then you come to frugality and you think of like stay-at-home moms clipping coupons and stockpiling groceries. But frugality to me is simply being a good steward of resources. So specifically limited resources. So primarily money, because that's to some extent limited. But also resources like natural resources and your time, because your time is very limited. And then just being wise on where you're putting your energy. So minimalism plays a big part of that. So not expending too much energy in a bunch of different places, but picking a few that really you can invest in. And it's just about living a full life and having so few responsibilities that you can actually identify what makes you full and what is your rich life.
Hmm. So when it comes to being able to save and invest more, right, there are two aspects of the equation. There's kind of the income, there's what you're bringing in, and then there's the expenses side. And frugality focuses mostly on the expenses. So why do you think focusing on the expenses is so important? Why is that kind of where you hone in?
Because those are the things that are most in our control. So investing is super important, but you can't really control what the market's doing, but you can control how much you're spending. And to an extent, yeah, you can try and lower your bills and stuff like that, but even that isn't completely in your control because somebody else is controlling what you pay. But if you're really focusing on your discretionary expenses, that is 100% in your control. And so even though sometimes it's just a latte here or buying a generic product there, it's completely in your control, and making those decisions and having that kind of locus of control can really bleed over into other aspects of your life too.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks, they might criticize frugality and they would say that, like, oh no, you need to have an abundance mindset, you know? But you think you can always earn more. But the fact is, if you don't have control of your spending, like, you can spend every single dollar you make, no matter how much money you make.
Yeah, and we've seen so many stories too, where it's people that make $100,000 or more, and they're still living paycheck to paycheck. Sometimes for a lot of people, it doesn't matter how much you're bringing in, you spend it all. And so frugality has to be a part of the equation, right?
Yeah, of course. And I think it's shifting your mindset to an abundance mindset, or out of a scarcity mindset, at least, that can help you control, like, what your expenses are. And so I don't think those two are separate. I think you need one to have the other.
Jen, so we talk a lot about the differences between, like, being frugal and being cheap. Like, sometimes we do a little segment where it's like, okay, frugal or cheap, Joel, this is what I did. Is this frugal? Or was this an example of me being cheap? Is there, in your mind, is there a distinction?
I love that. Yes. We talk about it all the time on the Frugal Friends podcast. It's kind of our motto, is frugal, not cheap. And so there's a distinct difference. So frugal saves you money. It improves your life. And cheap is anything that's inconvenient, or it lowers the value of your life. So making do with, like, something broken and just either not replacing it or something that's very important. So that would be being cheap, but looking
like duct taping
for
your glasses together or something like that.
Maybe I won't. It's different for everyone too.
Yeah.
So I'll say that, but going out and trying to find a replacement for that important thing on Facebook Marketplace and getting it used, or seeing if you can get it free from somebody else, or just thinking creatively of ways you can improve your life by replacing that product that doesn't initially resort to, I'm just going to go out and buy it full price without thinking. So that's kind of the difference.
Yeah. So do you have an instance where you were overly, thought you were being frugal, but maybe you waded into the cheap territory and you're like, dang it, I did it. Because when you are trying to toe that line, there are times if you're trying to be really frugal that you're probably going to accidentally wade over into being cheap.
Yeah. How much time do you have?
Oh, all the time in the world. Bring it.
We want to hear at least one or two good frugal fails.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's a big one. So we, for our debt-free celebration, we took a trip to Bali. In order,
by the way,
to,
I love that this is on the tail ends of you guys paying off your debt.
Yes, this is how we celebrated. Granted, we went to Bali because Bali is super inexpensive when you get over there. Yeah, it costs, the flight is a lot, but once you get over there, like, dollars a day for everything. So if you're looking for a frugal adventure, Bali. Anyways, I was trying to save some money on that flight, and I love buying discounted gift cards. So I bought 10 discounted Delta gift cards to use to buy my flight.
There you go.
And this was before I discovered travel hacking, but I got to buy the flight on Delta.com, and you could only use a limit of 3.
Ooh.
And I had just bought, and so that was like $700 worth of gift cards.
No.
I wasn't going to be able to use. So I called and sat on the phone with a sweet woman, and she had me enter the number to every gift card, like, over the phone. And so I was able to use all of them.
Oh, nice.
But it was, my stomach dropped. initially when I thought I could only use three. So I will never do that again. That was, I think, an example of being cheap.
Well, but at least in the end,
it worked out.
Yeah, it worked out.
Yes, it did work out in the end.
But that was a hassle probably too, right? And you're like, oh, it just wasn't worth it.
There were like 10 of them and they each had two like 16-digit codes. So I was on the phone for a good hour just saying numbers.
I feel like, yeah. Our time is often the biggest casualty when it comes to us being cheap, right?
Yes.
Especially early on, I think we have... It seems like we have all the time in the world. I could pick on something that I've done where I was being cheap, but Joel, it makes me think of, you know, early on when you would take your electric car over to the free chargers over in Atlantic Station and sit there in line.
Save myself a dollar to
say,
to waste an hour and a half.
Because everybody's lined up to get the free electricity and you're like, wait a minute, what am I doing with my life?
I had to rethink a lot of things at that point.
Jen, I loved reading about your love for pawn shops. You call them like your secret frugal weapon.
Yes.
I've only ever purchased one item in a pawn shop before. I went in there and grabbed an electric handsaw one time. But for you, like, what makes them so great and what do you often look for when you go there?
So I love pawn shops. We got my engagement ring at a pawn shop.
Wow.
So you just have to make sure you're going to like a reputable one. Like if you walk up to it and you feel safe outside, then that's probably going to be a safe bet. But if you pull in and you feel unsafe on the outside, like there's bars all over everything, then maybe rethink it. But I love especially ones that specialize in certain things. So the one where we got my engagement ring, they did only jewelry and like some high-end items. And they got a lot of it, yes, from people pawning, but a lot from estate sales as well. So that was something where I felt safe. They had a jeweler on staff to say what the ring was worth and stuff. And I also got the laptop I'm using right now at a pawn shop.
Ooh.
It had a lot of electronic tech items. And before I bought it, we called Apple and we read the number to make sure it wasn't stolen.
Nice.
Also called the police station, make sure there wasn't like anything out on it.
Smart.
Yeah. So if you take the necessary precautions you need to, you can get huge deals at pawn shops on bigger items. So like rings, laptops, power tools, stuff like that.
Stuff where there's a substantial savings, right? I'm sure how much was your ring discounted essentially?
So we got it for $800 and it was appraised. We went to a separate appraiser outside of it and it was appraised for
$3,000.
Wow. Awesome.
That's a good deal.
That's great.
Yes. So it was a good
deal. Wow.
Well, we want to get into some, because you have so much knowledge when it comes to massive debt reduction. We want to get to that in a second. But real quick, I want to ask you, too, about self-control when it comes to budgets. You know, we've tried to change how people view budgets on our show because we think they get a bum rap oftentimes. And budgets are so helpful and they can be so empowering. And I know you feel the same. And you've said that decision fatigue is actually ruining our budgets. So what do you mean by that?
Yeah. So decision fatigue is... the fatigue that your brain feels after making a lot of decisions. It's like when you're buying a car and the dealer at the end is going through all the add-on options. And by the end of it, you just want to get out of there. You've made so many decisions already that you'll kind of just go with whatever he says. You'll be more easily convinced of the validity of whatever he's saying.
Mm.
So that's what decision fatigue is. And to a lesser extent, it pops up every day in our lives. So at the grocery store, when you are, after you've picked all your produce and you've made sure, you know, you've got the good stuff, and then you're down in the middle aisles and you're really just going for the things that are right in front of you because at this point you're busy, you don't have a lot of time, you got to get out of there.
Oh, how'd those three boxes of Lucky Charms end up in my cart?
Right. So that's what happens to our brains after we make a lot of decisions. We just can't make any more decisions. So reducing the number of decisions you have during the day can actually help you stick to your budget better because you're not going to make as many of those impulse poor spending decisions come 4, 5, 6 o'clock because that's when it always happens, right? Like you do really good the first part of the day and then by mid-afternoon, it's kind of like, ugh, I can't do this anymore. So just trying to reduce the number of decisions that you make can be really helpful to sticking to your budget.
Awesome. Well, Jen, a lot of us are in debt, and you've got a new book called Pay Off Your Debt for Good, and we're going to talk about that right after the break.
All right, we're back from the break. We're talking with Jen Smith about frugality and debt reduction. And Jen, let's get on to kind of some debt reduction tactics. Obviously, it took some intense frugality to pay off $78,000 of debt in 2 years and with an income that was well under six figures. A lot of people might find that even unbelievable. So tell us about the situation you found yourself in and how you got about getting rid of that debt so quickly.
Yeah. So when my husband and I had just gotten married, he told me that the first thing he wanted to do was pay off his student loans. And I was like, actually, I don't really want to do that because I'm in my 20s and I don't want to spend them paying off debt, like living under a rock.
Boring.
Right. And so that was my biggest mind block to paying off debt, among other mind blocks. But he was really great and really gracious about trying to get me on board. And it actually didn't take me long to kind of come to his side. So when we got back from our honeymoon, I immediately went into, okay, if we're going to do this, I'm going all in. I'm a very all or nothing person. So we went all in. And what should have taken us 5 years, what I had planned, you know, the rest of my 20s, actually just took us 23 months.
Wow.
So under 2 years. And that was with, he was laid off twice in those 2 years.
Oh, gosh.
I could only get 25 hours a week at my main job. That was all they had for me. And we bought a house.
What?
In that 2 years. Right. And we were making.
What bank did you rob is the question.
SunTrust.
Was he getting laid off because he was a cashier at SunTrust? And,
siphoning a little.
I'm pulling home $20,000 a week.
Right. No, I mean, it was really just like putting our head down and making sure that we made the most of our time so that we did side hustles that weren't paying us, you know, minimum wage, but we tried to do higher wage side hustles. Being frugal, that was it. And we never made more than, even with all our side hustles, we never made more than $88,000 in a year, in either of those 2 years. So actually, I don't think we've gotten up to that since we paid off our debt.
So you're easily living on less than half of what you made to be able to pay off that much debt in that small amount of time.
Yeah, it worked out really well going from just living separately to combining our finances when we got married because we were already used to a certain lifestyle. So we never increased our lifestyle. We just went straight to living off one income, even when we had two. So we never have known anything different.
Yeah. Like you mentioned these higher wage side hustles. Like, can you share some examples of those that you and your husband did?
Yeah. So we first tried to leverage what we were already doing professionally. So Travis is an aircraft mechanic and he would go to other places in his hangar and he would fill out paperwork and sign paperwork for these other mechanics because that's like everyone's least favorite part of the job. So he would do paperwork for them. I was doing acupuncture at the time. So I did that at a like rehab center. So those were like ways that we could leverage our education to make more money. And then we just looked for like the regular side hustles that maybe made a little bit more. So Travis drove for Uber, but he would only do it during surge times when he could make more. And I did online data entry, which, you know, wasn't much, but I could do it kind of 15 minutes here, 15 minutes there. So it was a great way to like fill in time.
Man, you guys were industrious, that's for sure.
Yeah. One thing like you will learn about me very quickly is that I have a hard time like not moving or not doing something. I have a hard time sitting still. So, I mean, that was actually what taught me to value frugality because I did all these side hustles thinking I can just work more and pay off debt. And then 2 months into it, I got shingles because of the stress that it was causing my body at 26 years old.
Dang. Whoa.
Yeah. So that was what, you know, taught me. I was like, okay, I can't hustle my way out of this. I actually have to rest. And the only way I can rest and still pay off debt fast is to lower my spending.
Wow. Mm. So that's also part of why you don't focus on earning more, or, you know, I mean, you focus on ways to earn more, certainly, but frugality, that's maybe an even more important aspect of the equation for you, because you saw literal negative health consequences, negative health effects from
overwork,
from overworking. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. And over the past 4 years that I have been interested in practicing frugality, I've seen the benefits of resting and self-care and how you can still make these massive financial gains and take care of yourself. It's miraculous.
You don't have to work 80 hours a week in order to do this. Yeah.
And you shouldn't. Even if it took you maybe an extra year to pay off your debt, like, what are you losing in the grand scheme of things by just taking care of yourself and prolonging your debt payoff a little longer?
Yeah. Yeah. So your newest book, Jen, is a 21-day guide to paying off debt. So why 21 days? Why is that the magic number to help people learn how to pay off their debt?
It's kind of an inside joke between me and myself, because traditionally
loop us in on this inside joke.
Okay. Just for you guys, 21 days is traditionally what people say it takes to build a habit, which is grossly inaccurate. It depends on the habit, and it's always more than 21 days. So I said 21 days in this guide, knowing that it's a good start, but that's just what it is. It's just a start. And so I do talk a lot about building and breaking habits and their role in controlling your spending and ultimately sticking to your budget.
Yeah. Well, so on that, so much of our personal finances has to do with actually doing the right thing versus just understanding the right things to do, right? So how can we go about creating these good habits, you know, when it does come to our money?
Yeah. So the most easy way to reduce your decision fatigue is to make decisions without thinking. And that is all involves habits.
Good at doing things without thinking, Jen. Ask my wife.
Yes, I love that. I love doing things without thinking. They're not always good things. So for a while, you have to be intentional about making sure that they're good. And that comes down to breaking bad habits, because we have this finite amount of time in the day, and we always find ways to fill it. So you're not going to just expect to take a bad habit out and then go on with your day. You actually have to replace it with something, hopefully, that's good if you're being intentional about it. So breaking, for me, one of my biggest things was stopping at Chipotle whenever it was dinner time. I didn't even think about it. It was just, it's around that time. I don't feel like cooking because I hate cooking. Let's stop at Chipotle. And I had to stop and realize that, A, that was a habit. I don't even know if I love Chipotle. I don't even enjoy love Chipotle. It was just a habit. And then what do I replace it with? So I replaced
McDonald's.
It with, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I replaced it with meal planning, but even that was hard because 6 o'clock rolls around and I'm hungry, but I don't have any food. Mm. So I had to go a step further and start meal prepping on Sundays. So pre-chopping things so that everything for the week was ready to go. So I could just dump it in a pot and then turn it on. And that would take about as much time as going to Chipotle, waiting for my order and coming back. Hmm. So I had to replace my bad habit of just going to Chipotle with a pre-prepared good habit that was almost, it was harder to go to Chipotle at that point than to just cook what I had, because it was already pre-chopped and it was going to go bad if I didn't. That was the biggest example of habits in my life and reducing decision fatigue.
Mm, yeah, that's good stuff. And I think, the habit replacement, so clutch, so key in order to helping us do the right thing without thinking, right? And another helpful thing is to have some accountability. So anytime we're trying to accomplish something, it's helpful to have someone cheering us on, holding us accountable, helping us out. So what are some things to figure out when we're trying to create an accountability relationship? Someone to get someone in our corner, helping us actually achieve some of these goals that we have, especially when it comes to debt reduction.
Yeah. So first is to look in your own home. Obviously, if you're married or living with a partner, then that would be your first place to look for an accountability partner. But that is not always the case. And it doesn't mean that you shouldn't try to pay off debt, even if your partner's not on board. I say to kind of be more of the inspiration, take the lead on it if your partner's not on board, but don't pressure them and don't like nag them to be on board, because they're more likely to be inspired by you than pressured by you to join you.
Yeah.
So if you don't have that at home, then starting out with friends can be a good one. I started a blog. That's how I started, you know, what I do today.
With your digital friends.
Yeah.
Yes.
Holding yourself accountable in a sense.
Right. And so I would just write what I was learning and then post it on my Facebook. And then that would start conversations with different people. And that kind of attracted me to people that were on the same path. And so there was some accountability there. And if you don't have that, then on Instagram, there's a huge debt-free community. Literally, if you type in hashtag debt-free community, then you will find them. There's tons of people trying to pay off debt, supporting each other, sharing their journeys. So it can be as close as home or as far away as around the world, but accountability is out there and it will inspire and motivate you to keep going and give you a place to vent when things suck, because things will suck.
Yeah, well, you might get shingles.
You might.
26,
yeah.
So you just mentioned social media. You've also specifically mentioned how simplifying, you know, your online presence can be a big factor in helping individuals to kind of pay off their debt. Why do you think that is?
Because even unintentionally, we scroll social media and we see things that our friends are doing, things that they're wearing, things they have, and we just automatically want it. So that it's not even that they're showing off. It's just that something inside of us is triggered to want that thing. And so by limiting your social media, you limit that, friend advertising, and it translates into saving money. So while social media can be a really powerful tool, it's also something that you don't want to get wrapped up in. So maybe choosing one social media to really invest in, or even unfollowing people who tend to be more of a trigger for you. I know one of my best friends, she was my best friend before, she's my best friend now, but during our debt payoff, I had to unfollow her because she was doing all this cool stuff and getting all these cool things that I wanted.
I want that.
And it was a trigger for me. And so I had to unfollow her for that time. And she never knew. I never told her, you don't have to. But I needed to do that so that I could keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Finding a way to kind of curate who you follow is clutch. My wife, Kate, is amazing at just cutting people left and right. And because she uses Instagram as like a tool to help her learn, specifically maybe about something that she's interested in. And so if she's kind of done with learning how to cook with her Instapot, she will unfollow all those people who are into cooking. And then she follows all these nurseries and all these plant people, because now she's trying to learn about, you know, taking care of houseplants. She's really good about doing that and then finding ways to allow that knowledge to kind of teach her versus just kind of passively being fed, you know, whatever that the algorithms want to feed us.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, well, that's great. I mean, I think social media can have such an impact, and it's hard to see what the impact is on us. One of the biggest things that I've done, I think I mentioned it on a show a while back, the newsfeed eradicator plugin for Facebook.
I love it. Yes.
It's so great.
I have it. I love it.
I don't see any long-winded posts on Facebook. I only specifically go to the groups that I'm a part of. In particular, you know, the How to Money group is my favorite. But going there, I go directly there and I bypass all just the crazy stuff that you would typically see on Facebook. And it makes it more of a tool that I can use and enjoy, as opposed to this thing that's trying to suck my attention and also suck some dollars out of my life too, oftentimes.
Yeah, I have the newsfeed eradicator, and during quarantine, I had to take the Facebook app off my phone because it was just getting too much. So now I don't see anything from the newsfeed, and it's magical.
Yeah, it is truly magical. All right, well, Jen, we got some more questions for you, including how paying off debt maybe changes. Does it change when it comes to living in an economic downturn? We'll get to some of those questions right after the break.
today, we're talking with Jen Smith about frugality and paying down some debt. Jen, let's talk about sort of the times that we're in right now, you know, some of the economic downturns that we've experienced. We're kind of still in the middle of that. Do you feel that this has changed your advice at all to folks in how they pay down their debt?
It has changed it a little bit, yeah. And I think if anybody tells you different, then they're kind of out of touch. Hmm. But normally we say to have a small emergency fund and then go hard at paying your debt. But I think right now is the time to have that fully funded emergency fund first, and then get back to paying off your debt.
Yeah.
Because even though we are coming out of, you know, the really bad times that were March, April, May, there's still a lot of things we don't know about for the, you know, the coming year or so. So to have that cash cushion that you can make some hard decisions with, so you can make harder, more difficult decisions about work and life if you know that you have some cash to fall back on. And that's what you want to focus on first. And then think about paying off debt. But also don't think about or don't forget about investing, because this is a good time to maybe start to dabble in it, at least with a 401k or an IRA, because stock prices are relatively low right now. They're not great recession low, but it's still something to think about. You can play around with it maybe.
Yeah. So Matt and I talked a couple of months ago about kind of some stats that showed that Americans seem to be saving more and frugality seems to be a little bit more in vogue right now. So have you seen, and do you think we'll continue to see a surge in folks maybe defecting from a high spending lifestyle to a more frugal approach right now?
Absolutely. And unfortunately, I think this year was the shock that a lot of people needed to wake up from what their lifestyle was doing to their future. So I think that at least for the foreseeable future, frugality is still going to be a really important part of people's lives. So people should think about that when they're considering paying off debt, because that means the side hustles that were really lucrative before all this are not going to be as lucrative. So frugality is going to be even more important for people relying on side hustles to pay off debt or make ends meet. Because, yeah, we're not going to see what we saw. We were at the end of the longest bull market in history. People were doing really well. And we're just not going to be there again for a little while.
Yeah, there are a lot of folks who graduated college and then got a job, started investing, and yeah, they've never seen the kind of the times that we're living in now. And I totally agree with you as far as this kind of being more of a wake up call. So going back to the emergency fund real quick, Jen, I was curious if you had an amount maybe that you would recommend to folks before these tough times, you know, because a lot of times folks would say like 3 to 6 months worth of living expenses. For you personally, I'm curious, yeah, what do you feel comfortable with as far as the size of your cash cushion?
So it depends on how many people you have in your family and how volatile your job is. If you have a really safe, secure job and you are living alone, then 3 months could be okay for you, 3 months worth of a bare bones budget and giving a little extra. That could be fine. But if you have a large family, you're an entrepreneur, you are unsure of how long you're going to have your job, then 6 months, definitely. And then that's going to be even more increased because your bare bones budget is going to be pretty hefty. So that's kind of how I tell people, think of it, like, how volatile is your job? How big is your family? And go from there.
Yeah. Jen, money challenges, no spend challenges, those can actually help us ramp up to increasing that emergency fund in a big way pretty quickly. And it might be great to implement during some lean times like this. So even if their income hasn't changed recently, why do you think people should consider one of these no spend challenges?
I have been a fan of no spend challenges since we were paying off debt, because I am very all or nothing. So trying to do moderation was just not working for me. So the only thing that really moved the needle in making me aware of my spending and saving significantly was to challenge myself to not spend on anything besides obvious bills and things that I needed to live. So for the first few weeks, that was definitely hard. I was making more decisions than normal because I was actively thinking about not buying things I would have habitually bought anyways. But after that, it got me to a point where I was saving a couple hundred bucks every time, a couple hundred extra bucks every time I would do one of these challenges for a month. Mm. And more than that, it made me aware of what my habits were, what my triggers were for impulse spending. So like the kind of day I was having at work or whatnot. So it made me more aware and it taught me lessons that I took into my life after the challenge was over so that I could start trying to consciously make these decisions. And it really changed the way I budget. It changed a lot of things for me.
Like, how would you recommend for someone to go about like one of these no spend challenges? I mean, do you basically just say, all right, I'm not going to spend any money, except I guess, you know, you have to spend money on food, but like
no, how? Hunger strike for a month too, man.
Yeah.
I'm going to do a juice
try
fast.
It. Try it.
But yeah, like what guidelines or what parameters would you encourage folks to set up or to think through if they're wanting to do one of these no spend challenges?
I recommend that everyone try to do their own unique kind of no spend challenge. So don't just take the rules that somebody else gives you and try to replicate them, because you know the most about your spending. Even if you feel like you don't know anything about it, you still know the most about it. So look at your transactions from the last few months and see what has still been a source of overspending for you. For a lot of people right now, I know is shopping on Amazon. So before this, I know those same people, it was restaurant spending. So just look at what your spending has been on and then try and cut those things out during a no spend challenge. And you could go all the way and just cut out everything except for fresh produce, stuff like that. That's kind of what we did. But you don't have to. Really make it your own. You can focus on one or two things at a time. You can do everything. You can do one of my favorite things right now is instead of doing a full month, to try and accumulate 15 no spend days throughout the month. It's a lot more manageable. I got that tip from my friend Kate at That Debt Free Life on Instagram, and she did it for a whole year and accumulated 6 months of not spending by doing that system for a year. And so it's a lot less restrictive. Yeah, it's a great idea. So really make it your own. Challenge yourself in a way that is going to be challenging, but not overwhelming.
Yeah, I love that. And there's something so empowering about realizing that you can curb your spending in a way like that, right? And kind of giving yourself, Matt and I have talked about gamification, how that can be such an important way of getting control of your finances. And that's a way of gamifying it, right? It's challenging yourself. And you're like, no, I'm going to beat this. I'm going to do this. And then you see the results and you're like, dude, I did it. It's so encouraging.
Yes, that's exactly what I say about it. It's gamifying frugality.
Yeah. All right. Last question for you, Jen. You do a bill of the week on every episode of the Frugal Friends podcast. So do you have a favorite bill this week?
Ooh. So I'm going to say the one that I say every time I'm asked this, because it's truly my favorite bill. I love Bill Curtis from... most notably, Anchorman. He is the Anchorman voice in Anchorman, but he is also the scorekeeper on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Oh gotcha.
Yeah.
Nice.
So both crowds, two different crowds will know who he is. So, and every week he opens Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me with a pun, like on the word Bill. And every time I smile... because I wish that I could say them also on our show, but...
Sorry, they've been used
They're
up.
So great. I know.
That is your favorite bill.
Yeah.
Well, it's a favorite bill.
Jen, thanks so much for joining us. How can our listeners find out more about you and what you're up to?
So we have a new episode of the Frugal Friends podcast every single Friday. This Friday, actually, we have Rachel Cruz... on the show talking about budgeting. Yeah. So that's an exciting
one. Of Ramsey Industries, correct?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. So we've got Rachel on and she's super fun. And then I also do videos every week at modernfrugality.com and Modern Frugality on YouTube. So if you want to see my face, there is no shortage of places to see it.
Excellent.
Love it. Well, Jen, thanks so much for taking the time out of your day. We know you are busy as well. And thanks so much, too, for sharing your story. I think this is going to be really encouraging for a lot of folks as they are setting out to pay down lots of debt as well. So thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for allowing me to come.
All right, Matt, that was such a great conversation with Jen. I love her take on frugality. I love her dedication to paying off debt. Learned a lot, definitely, talking to her about this, because you know I'm one of those people. I've been fortunate to never have just a massive amount of debt to pay off. But I love hearing from people that have been able to do it, because that's a situation that so many people find themselves in. And it's something that I can't speak to directly, right? I think we have advice on that, but it's not something that I've had personal experience with. So bringing on somebody like Jen, so helpful. But I want to know, what was your big takeaway from our conversation with Jen?
Yeah. So mine has to do with how her and her husband were making that extra money in order to pay down that debt.
Yeah.
When she said that their original plan was to pay down their debt in 5 years, but then somehow they were able to do it in two, something serious was going on. Obviously, she's probably, you know, the queen of being frugal, because you have to make massive cuts in order to get your expenses down to pay down that debt. But they were also making a lot of money on the side. And specifically, she kind of highlighted how they were leveraging their professional careers and making additional money in those areas, right? They weren't necessarily recycling cans and doing all these small ways to kind of move the needle a little bit. They were looking at, like, where do we have expertise? How can we leverage our careers to make extra money that way? I think that's a brilliant way of going about it, because when you're already proficient in a specific industry, that should probably be the first stop as far as where you need to focus your efforts in order to make more money.
Yeah, I love how her husband was taking the work that nobody else wanted to do.
I love that.
And he was getting some side hustle money from people he worked with by filling out the paperwork that nobody else wanted to do. Like, what a brilliant thing to do. That's kind of one of those things, it's easy to think about. And she even said, yeah, they did a little bit of driving for Uber. Her husband did that only during surge times. And that can be smart too. But yeah, finding the way to leverage the expertise you currently have, it's a brilliant way to make some extra money. So
yeah. Well, how about you, man? What was your big takeaway from this episode?
Yeah, I think when Jen said that we've kind of all gone through a little bit of a shock right now with the pandemic, and we've been able to see kind of maybe a little bit more what our lifestyle is doing to our future. When she said that, that kind of struck a chord with me. I think we don't often think about it like that. We don't think about how our current lifestyle is impacting our future ability to live life on our own terms. But if we can think about it a little more like that, if we can realize that the choices we make today affect our future selves, affect future Matt, future Joel, and they have a big impact on how much we're forced to work and the ultimate freedom and flexibility that we have. I hope more of us are realizing that our current choices have this big impact on our future selves and actually are probably having a big impact on how we're able to live life right now if things have become a little bit tougher. But yeah, the more that we can change things now, the more it's going to have an impact on us being able to choose for ourselves how we want to live, what we want to do. So if you have gone through the shock to a certain degree, don't let it have a negative impact on you. Let it be kind of a positive shock that redirects kind of the way that you seek to spend your money, the way that you seek to save and invest, because sometimes we need that shock to the system. Yeah. Sometimes we need kind of a 2x4 to the side of the face to kind of get us moving in the right direction, right? Maybe not actually a 2x4.
All of your illustrations here are so violent. No, I agree though. Like, using these experiences to fuel us, right? And knowing that small changes now can have a massive change on our future selves, and our future selves will think our former selves.
Yeah. All right. For a nonviolent example, I'll say it's like the rudder on the back of a ship.
There you
right?
go.
Yeah, a small rudder can turn a big ship. It doesn't turn it super quickly, right? That one little move you make, that second little move you make, the inches that the rudder is moving, it doesn't seem to be making a difference. But then...
But give it a second.
Exactly. And then the whole course of the ship starts to change.
Yeah.
And 24 hours later, you're in the Bahamas. You know? And so it is one of those things that those small changes actually do have a major impact on where you're headed and where you end up.
Yeah, man. All right. Well, this episode was a blast. And we didn't actually have a beer on this episode since we're recording this one in the morning.
But this Aldi coffee was tasty.
Yeah, it was. Doing the cold brew here in the summer months. This was fantastic. So let's go ahead and wrap up the episode, man. We'll have our show notes up on the website at howtomoney.com. And we'll link to Jen's podcast as well as her site where she blogs as well.
Yeah, for folks that have enjoyed this episode, definitely go check out Jen's podcast. And if you have been enjoying this podcast, please hit the subscribe button, leave a review if you feel so inclined. We'd appreciate that. And so, Matt, until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.